Have you ever been touched by an angel? Has someone stepped in and helped out in a time of need, perhaps by paying a bill or dropping off some groceries? If so, tell us your story when you call 855-64-THRIVE. We're working on a special Focus on the Family program about Good Samaritans and meeting other people's needs. It's your chance to say thank you and to inspire others. The number is 855-648-4748. I am so stupid, Dad. I just can't do this. Well, that's a comment I heard just a couple of days ago from one of my kids, and it may be that you have children who feel that same way. How do you respond? This is Focus on the Family with Focus President and author Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and our guest today will help you do just that.
You know, John, that's a common question. It's funny you should say one of your children just asked you that, because I got that the other night, too.
Oh, did you?
You know, it's that probably that fumbling moment where he's not doing as well in some homework, and he just looked at me and he said, I feel like I'm stupid.
Yeah, comparing and finding, oops, didn't get the grade I wanted.
Well, there's nothing like grades to make you compare to others, because grades do that.
Yeah.
You either in the A, the B, the C, the D category, hopefully not the F category, but that's what it does, and we're going to talk about what that right question is with somebody very special today. And I think she will bring some very fascinating principles that should help all of us as parents realize how your child is smart. No, I'm not grammatically messing that up. That's exactly the title of the book, How Am I Smart, written by Dr. Kathy Cook. And Kathy, it's great to have you here at Focus.
Thank you. It's fabulous to be here.
This is a really interesting concept. I don't know how you stumbled upon this, but you started to look at the way that children are smart. And there's different types of smart that you talk about. Start there. What are you getting at when we talk about the different types of smart?
Howard Gardner is the inventor of the model, a brilliant man from Harvard who discovered in the late 70s that we have one brain divided into eight parts. So the wrong question is, am I smart? Because I think the answer should always be yes. I tell children that they weren't made to be stupid. Stupid is their choice. They were made to be smart. Hmm. And another question that's really unhealthy is, well, how smart am I? Because that allows me to have the bully language of, I'm smarter than you are. But the healthy question is, how am I smart? And there's eight different ways of being smart. And you know what? Smart's a power word. Like your boy who said to you, you know, I feel so stupid. They need to feel smart, because when you feel smart and you discover you are smart, then you can be smart. And you
so
can
is it a confidence? Are you saying it's a confidence issue?
I think it is related to confidence, because if I know I'm smart and I'm assigned a new topic to study or a new chore at home, my reaction will be, oh, I can do that because I am smart. And smart people show up and are able to work well and do well. So the eight intelligences are exciting. I can go through those for you.
Well, let's touch on them. Why don't you just mention the eight, and then we'll come back and pick on some of them.
Sure. And what's really important to understand right up the front here is that everybody has all eight. So we're word smart. We think with words. When we're excited, we probably talk. When we are being logic smart, we think with questions, and we love it when things make sense. When we are being picture smart, we think with our eyes and in visuals, and we might like fiction and history because it comes alive in our mind's eye. When we're being music smart, we think with rhythms and melodies, and we can drive people nuts with our humming and our toe tapping, but we can also sing in tune and play musical instruments and glorify God through participating in a church orchestra. When we're being body smart, we think with movement and touch, and we can be the classic athlete, but we can also be the dancer, the clay sculptor, or the actor who can make her whole body look angry when she's really not angry at all.
Now, does that element, and we'll talk more about all of them in a minute, but that one there, is that more the hyperactive child? I mean, if your body moves all the time?
That's a great question. It can look like ADHD, quite frankly, and they may be that or they may not be that. I think that we are over-medicating children who are not ADHD.
They're just
highly
active.
Our body's smart,
yeah.
And they think through movement and touch. But if you are body smart by God's choice and also ADHD medically, then you really will be the mover and the shaker and the one who needs to have some real guidance in how to successfully navigate life, even as an adult. Let's see. The sixth one is nature smart. And when we're being nature smart, we think with patterns. And that's how we know a bluebird isn't a blue jay and an elm tree isn't an oak tree. And we might appreciate the science topics related to nature and not so much the magnet unit in school. And then the last two are fascinating. People smart, and we think with other people. So we know what we know when we hear ourselves say it and we get someone to respond to it. So that's the brainstormer and the one who loves discussion in small groups. And the opposite of that is the self-smart person who thinks deeply inside of herself and knows what she knows, what she knows, what she knows, and doesn't necessarily need to tell anyone.
Now, with those last two particularly, the personality, does it play in there? Because in some ways, that describes for me kind of the introverted nature, where you're a deep thinker, you go to a party, you sit along the wall, and you look at people, and you're just, you get deep with one or two people. Whereas the other person, the people smart person, is perhaps more social, more extrovert. Is that fit, or am I seeing it incorrectly?
It's a great conclusion that most people have. And what's fascinating about it is that we could be extroverted and people smart, but we could be extroverted and self-smart. We can be introverted and people smart, and that would be me. To be honest with you, I'm an introvert, which means that I get my energy when I'm alone. It doesn't mean that I'm not good with people. I have many great friends, and I have people skills, people tell me. But as an introvert, I get my energy when I have my alone time. But I'm people smart, so I love to think with people. If you're a self-smart person who's introverted, you really will crave quiet, peace, privacy, and space, and you will need that space in order to be successful. So the child who comes home from school doesn't want to immediately talk about her day. She needs 10 or 15 minutes in her bedroom to recharge, and then she can handle being with people because she's been with people all day. And she's a self-smart person who just wants to think her thoughts and doesn't necessarily want to tell the teacher what she's thinking. So we can be a good match. People and extroverted would be a good internal fit. Self-smart and introverted is a good internal fit. Because we're made in God's image and he makes us complete and he is complete, I think a lot of us have the personality of extroverted and the self-smart, or the personality of introverted and the smart of being people smart. And that allows us to navigate throughout life.
Now, I was going to ask you, because you taught elementary school. So in that profession, that vocation, prior to doing the work you're doing now, did you notice this in the children? Is that when it began to kind of fit for you, that the kids learn differently? They have different smart capability.
It's a great question. That was part of the impetus for me to earn my PhD, because I was frustrated that I had what I thought was good educational theory, and it didn't always work. It didn't always connect, and it didn't always allow the same children to be successful, you know, Monday through Friday. So earning my PhD in educational psychology and reading, becoming a professor and helping young people who wanted to teach children understand the differences. And difference isn't bad. And difference isn't stupid. Different is different. And as educators and as parents and as children's pastors, it's our responsibility to know them well enough to be able to speak truth to them in ways that they can receive it. And that's where these smarts become really practical. You don't have to reinvent curriculum necessarily. You can do curriculum changes at home if you're homeschooling or when you're helping your kids with homework, but it really can be just the method that changes, just the language you use.
It's so true. And I would think, you know, again, to think outside the box, so to speak, about how your child is intelligent, and to have the idea that actually it can express itself in different ways is right out of the gate something refreshing, because, you know, we all do it as human beings. We compare.
Yes.
And for our children, I think there's no greater height of comparison than with our kids. And either they're succeeding in very well planned out school curriculum, you know, or they're not. And if they're not, it doesn't necessarily mean they're stupid. And I use that word because our kids have used it.
Sure.
You know, they're struggling with their homework and they say, I feel stupid. I mean, to hear that from your son, I'm saying, okay, wait a minute. What's the problem? What aren't you grasping? And it can come right down to those core curriculum courses. You know, somebody's good at math, but they're not good at English, or vice versa. Let's take a look at some of these and just dissect them. You talk about word smart. Describe that in a little more detail, then let's pick it apart.
Okay. Those of us who are word smart, we like to read, write, speak, and listen. It's actually a school smart, because what do we do all day in school? We speak, listen, read, and write. So kids who have a lot of brain cells in the word smart part of their brain are going to find school more successful and probably an easier thing for them to accomplish.
They'll enjoy it?
They'll enjoy it more because they're able to be more easily successful. But it doesn't mean that everything comes easily to us. But it doesn't scare us to do our spelling words and to write. Especially a nonfiction writing would be the combination of logic smart, Fiction writing is the combination of picture smart. None of the smarts ever work alone. Those of us who are word smart, we can get in trouble by talking. I'm an example of a kid who was a chatty Cathy as a child, and now people pay me to talk. You know, it's an amazing thing. And one of the things I love about teaching children directly or helping parents go home and translate this for their children is to say, you are created on purpose, and you are supposed to be someone that does something good to the glory of God. And you know what, you guys, if I would have been raised, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, would you go find something to do? I am so sick of your talking. I wouldn't be here today on the radio with you. My parents were amazing, and they chose to listen to me. Now, when I was about 9, they enrolled me in children's theater. They said, go talk there a while. You know, that's a true story.
Smart, though.
Yeah, very smart, because it, again, used one of my intelligences. Sure. They didn't know that at the time.
Well, they planted you in a garden that you could flourish in.
Bingo. Exactly, exactly. And then when I was in high school, I became a part of the forensics team, and I earned ribbons giving speeches. And what do I do now as a living? I give speeches. I'm an author. So we are the ones who can either tease and gossip and name call, or edify, encourage, and teach the truth.
I want to ask you about that because, you know, for me, I have a memory. It's a deep memory for me because I was a talker as well. I extroverted and I loved to talk. And I can remember as a 5-year-old, I think I obviously irritated adults around me because I would be the why guy. Why is that? Why is this? Why is that? And talk, 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 talk. And one time, my mom's best friend, Penny, who has passed away, so I can say this without offending her, but I remember she looked at me. I think I was 5. I remember this so clearly. And she said, you have diarrhea of the mouth. And it just crushed me. I thought, oh, I better stop talking because I don't think that's really good. I wasn't mad at her. I was... All of a sudden, I was like, oh, I'm doing the wrong thing. This isn't how I should be.
Jim, I hear that from children all the time. That in that what there's something that happens with our smarts called paralysis, where if you are told the wrong thing in the wrong way, or if you don't get to hear the thing that you're desperate to hear, that part of the brain can be paralyzed. It's really possible that for a while, you stop.
Shut down.
You shut down. And then... praise God, something or someone came along who reawakened that part of the brain, or we wouldn't be here today with you on the radio. Well, we do need to be really careful of how we respond. My dream for parents is that they would help children develop the character qualities that are necessary so that we use our intelligences for good and not evil. Mm-hmm. I obviously needed to learn how to listen and give my brother a chance to speak, and I needed to know that I was teachable and could benefit from what other people had to say. It wasn't all about me.
Well, and I think another aspect of this is intriguing to me, as you just said. With each smart type, you have the ability to use it for good or to use it for evil. Mm-hmm. As I looked at the book that you wrote, How Am I Smart? That came out to me just how, you know, this is the tool that God puts in your hand, your intelligence, and you can use it in a variety of ways. My youngest, going back to the word smart child, it's interesting because it's kind of a blend. He is very verbal. He loves words, but I'd say his spelling scores are kind of slightly above average, but more like a B, not an A. Mm-hmm. Is that typical as well? He may not just be into learning all he should with the spelling words, but be very verbal and word-oriented?
Exactly. In fact, I'm exactly the same way, Jim. I am certainly word smart. I'm not a very good speller, and people are sometimes surprised by that because I've written books and I haven't earned a PhD. The reason spelling is hard for me, and this might be true for your son, is I'm very logic smart. And those of us who are logic smart want things to make sense.
Knife, like the word knife does not work.
Or my favorite example is the number 4 has a U in it, and the number 14 has a U in it, but when you spell the number 40, there's no U.
Yeah.
And it's like, where's the U?
These are arguments that he'll make to me. So this
exactly.
is perfect.
So it's the logic smart. So what we say to those kids is, you're not stupid. Spelling isn't hard because you're stupid. Spelling is hard because of the way you're smart. And that is so engaging for children to understand. And then what we have to help them discover is that rules don't always work. And those are the words we memorize because the rule isn't going to work. I'm also not very picture smart. It's number 7 or 8 for me out of the 8. I have it because all of us created by a generous God with all of these abilities. But because I'm not very picture smart, I don't remember what the word looked like the last time I saw it. So I don't remember, like the rule, double the final consonant before you add the suffix. That doesn't always work, which of course irritates me because I'm logic smart. And then I can't remember the last time I saw the word, were there 2 P's or was there 1 P? So you put that together. And so what do? I travel with the misspeller's dictionary. There is such a tool. It's a brilliant book. Mm. You look up the word the way you think it should be spelled, and you'll find it there.
That's amazing.
Because like knife, I would look under N. N-I-F-E, that's how it should be spelled, right? And I'll find it there. The dictionary doesn't pronounce the word for you or define it, but it will give you then the correct spelling. Well, and of course, I use spell check, and I have people on my staff edit my work for me.
Now, what's fascinating when you apply this to culture, and you look in Asia, for example, I studied at Waseda in Japan, in college, but when you do kanji or Chinese characters, they're pictograms. And
yes.
So they're not even, it's such a different system. They're putting pictures together to describe something, to give it meaning. So they don't use the Western approach of letters form words that mean something. Pictures mean something. So I would think just by the cultural default that they're high picture smart people.
Yes, I think that's a great conclusion. I think God creates that. You look at any Asian language, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, how could you possibly learn those if you weren't picture smart? And an application, as I've traveled the world working with missionaries, I've met missionaries in Asia who have had to leave Asia and go serve somewhere else because they couldn't learn the language. Mm. And they're not stupid. And it wasn't that they had made a mistake or hadn't heard God correctly. They heard from someone like me that this is why this is so challenging. Why stay here? Let's go to Eastern Europe, or let's go someplace where the written language isn't going to be our drawback. And what a gift for them to discover that they're not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They're smart in a way that would make this either easy or hard.
Mm. I love the pictogram that they use for Savior is a roof over a lamb.
And
that's
seriously?
A course from 2,000 years ago. Yeah, that was the early journeys of the church, obviously. And that's how they depicted Jesus, was a roof over a lamb.
See, and I think that's a word smart, picture smart, logic smart combination, right?
In every way.
That's so cool.
Mm. Well, our guest today is Dr. Kathy Cook, and she's written the book called How Am I Smart? A Parent's Guide to Multiple Intelligence. This is just flying by. I'm trying to keep up with it all. And if you are, then let me encourage you to get a copy of the book. We'll send that to you for a donation today of any amount. Details at focusonthefamily.com/radio. And Kathy, just for those who are joining us here, you're talking about 8 different kinds of smart that we all have available to us, I guess, from what you've said. Does that mean that I can do all of these just to varying degrees of effectiveness?
Most of us can. What I say to parents is that I believe we are born with the capacity to develop all 8 as strengths. Things do happen. There are birth defects and tragedies and occasions where a part of the brain may not fully develop, or there might be paralysis that takes place because of something that someone didn't even intend to do, and that part of the brain is then stifled and a child is actually afraid to use it. Most of us, if we've had an eclectic upbringing and we've been exposed to a variety of things, we'll have 5 or 6 of the intelligences that we can rely upon quite easily in going back and forth because they work together well. And many of us will have 1 or 2 that aren't as important to us, partly because of the way we're raised. The research says that the earlier the brain is awakened, the greater the likelihood it'll be a strength for a lifetime. And that's one of the reasons that parents of young children need to expose their children to a variety of even play toys so that each part of the brain has a chance to awaken. Go to the park and develop the nature smart. Go to an art museum to develop the picture smart, or a craft class. Go to a gymnastics class to develop the body smart. Mm-hmm. The younger they are when they're awakened, the greater the likelihood they'll be a strength. Is it egotistical to think I have 8 strengths? I don't know. That would depend
on
the
person.
Well,
I know I don't have 8 strengths.
Okay. I don't
know. But we can rely on them, even if they're not strengths. Like, even though picture smart is not one of my strengths, I've developed it more fully by hanging out with picture smart people and by taking the time. Like, for picture smart people, if I say the word dinosaur, they'll see it instantly, right? And you can't not make that happen. There's no gate you can put there. That's why we have to be so careful of what we let our children be exposed to, because you just say it and it's in your head. For me, it's not. The word dinosaur shows up.
The word shows up. Oh, that's interesting.
Because
you said it and a picture of a dinosaur showed up for me.
Right. Now I can see it if I take the time and if I'm motivated. And that's what parents and teachers need to do, is to give kids time and to set up the motivation so that they can use that part of the brain and discover that those brain cells are there too.
Well, and I think it's fascinating. I think circumstances play a great role in that. Mm-hmm. I think when you talk about having those 8 arrows available to you, I think, again, it's a great design by the Lord to allow you a tool depending upon what your environment gives you. And I think, is that a fair way to look at that? That you have that capacity, but if you're growing up in China with pictograms, you're going to develop a pictorial approach to language versus a logic Western approach where a word means something. That's a
absolutely
fair example of it.
Absolutely. It's a great example.
Let's move to the next one, logic smart. I think I have one of those sons as well, but go ahead and describe logic smart.
Yeah, we're the ones who think with questions. Actually, when you said that you were the child that used to ask why all the time, that would be an example of being logic smart. We love figuring things out on our own, so we can be a little bit dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, when mom says, don't put the milk in the bowl yet, we're like, why not? What's going to happen?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
Exactly. And then we didn't do it. And that's where self-control comes into play, of course. So we love it when things make sense. We love to discover truth on our own. We tend to be fact-based. Truth is really important.
So high justice.
Yes, high justice for the logic smart person. We can struggle with faith because you can't reason your way to faith. That's a whole topic in itself, which is fascinating.
How does a parent of a logic smart child address that, though, knowing that if you have a logic smart orientation with your child, how can you say the right things to help plant the seed so that child will find it easier to come to faith?
Yeah, we answer their questions.
Honestly, straightforward.
We don't blow their questions off. We don't say, you don't need to know that yet. We don't say, go look it up. We call the children's pastor and say, can you help me with this? We go maybe to a search engine. We maybe go to our own word of God, the Holy Word, and we look it up for the child.
But you're saying something that's very important because a logic child, and my oldest Trent tends to lean, I think, in this direction. You don't want to assume that they're too young to understand these things. He has a grasp and an ability to manage very adult themes. Even as a 7-8-year-old, I could see that early on with him. And he loves chess. And you could just see that he can manage things a little better than like his younger brother that doesn't have as much of that logic smart orientation. And you need to be straightforward with that child, don't you?
Absolutely. It's a great insight. We need to know our children, right? We need to study our children. We need to be detectives toward our children so that we know, are they a deep thinker or are they not? Are they a feeler or a thinker, if you will? Do they benefit from discussion or do they need that quiet time to reflect? So those, the logic smart kids, answer their questions, ask them questions, and comfort them when things don't make sense. Hug them and say, sweetheart, the world doesn't always make sense. And if they're already saved or you're raising them in the faith, then you would say, but it makes sense to God. You know, in my upbringing, I had to just decide, I don't get it all, but that's okay. So we choose as an act of obedience and faith to believe that God gets it, and that's good enough for us.
And it's good, again, to speak to that logic smart child in that way.
Absolutely.
To give them the rings of the things that they can hang on to, that God is still there even though bad things happen
right.
and children are harmed. And those are the logic people are the ones that are going to say, well, why would bad things happen to good people?
Right.
Why wouldn't God logically reward me if I'm doing everything right?
Exactly.
And adults do that as well. But I mean, that is kind of the logic-oriented smart person, correct?
It is. And they can feel disconnected in youth group. They can have a hard time sometimes with their peers. Those of us who are logic smart, we tend to not like small talk. I can sometimes be in a social setting with my life group at church or with whatever, and I'm like, for instance, I'm going to a baby shower in a few days, and I'm going as an act of obedience and love for the person, and I'm willing to go and I'm happy to go. To be honest with you, as someone who's very logic smart, I will not enjoy the chatter that to me doesn't get us anywhere. Those of us who are logic smart are solution focused. We can either solve problems or create problems for others to solve, by the way. And so we need to be careful of these kids. We need to help them. When I say to kids, when I introduce them to myself and I say, look, this might be why your own family Thanksgiving dinner is stressful for you. Go anyway and honor your grandparents, but understand that you're not a bad kid, that this is hard for you. It's hard for you because of the way God made you smart. It might mean someday you'll be a counselor, a lawyer, a teacher, a police officer, a brilliant pastor who can figure out the truth of the gospel.
You're saying something there that really is important. When you have a child that has this smart bent, one of the eight that you're talking about, and they're about to be put into a position where they're uncomfortable, use it as a teaching moment to help expand that area for them That's a brilliant thing to do. It does take knowing your child and knowing that your introverted logic child, if you're going to put them in a social setting and they're going to be uncomfortable, you need to explain why they're going to feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've done a good job of that. I mean, this book and this content really helps me to better understand that sensitivity, because it probably will give them a greater sense of peace as they are in that awkward position. Mm-hmm.
Is that fair? They tell me they find peace and hope, and they don't feel like bad kids. And what's interesting is sometimes they'll say to me, you know, one day I want to be with my family and the next day I don't. And they feel really awkward in that. Well, that's often because of the different intelligence that was activated. Or sometimes it's that mom and dad aren't smart the way they're smart. You know, if a mom isn't as logic smart as a 7-year-old son, that can be pretty intimidating.
And that can happen.
It can definitely happen. The mom has those brain cells there that she can choose to develop and honor her creator by choosing to go to that part of her brain as a way of honoring and loving her son. But she can also very honestly say to her son, that is a great question I've never even thought of. Mm. Let's work together to get the answer, rather than feeling bad that she doesn't know. It's okay she doesn't know. Mm. 7-year-olds will ask questions we've never thought of before.
It's so good. Kathy, there is so much to talk about. We have covered only a couple of the smart types. And I think it'd be good to come back next time, if you're willing to stick with us, and continue to cover the others and talk about the spiritual consequences of this. Are you willing to do that?
I would love to do that. Thanks.
Let's do it. Author of the book, How Am I Smart? Dr. Kathy Cook. We'll come back and we'll continue the discussion. And John, you can make this book available.
We sure can. And you can learn more about Dr. Cook's book and watch some exclusive comments from her about how your smarts impact your marriage and some advice for parenting teens based on their smart style. And we have a quick summary of those 8 different kinds of smart available to you, so you can print off or reference it there. And of course, a CD or audio download of our conversation. All of that at focusonthefamily.com/radio. Or call for details, 800, the letter A, and the word family, 800-232-6459. And by the way, if you haven't contributed lately to our ministry here, we'd invite you to do so today when you call or go online. Your generous gift allows us to continue reaching out with very practical programming like this. Our broadcast was provided by Focus on the Family and made possible by generous listeners like you. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back tomorrow as we look at how you're smart and how you can use those smarts to better connect with God. That's next time, when we once more turn our hearts toward home.